Welcome to part two of the Creatively Speaking podcast. This is the series that we recorded on July 12th and 13th at the New Rochelle Public Library entitled Diversity Rising, Local is Global. And here we are introducing the film Double Play by Ernest Dickerson, produced by Lisa Cortez. I had with me Terry Prettyman Bowles, co-hosting, who is a New York-based editor, writer, producer, and media arts consultant with a wide range of experience across a range of platforms, including magazine, digital, and book publishing. Terry holds a degree in journalism from Howard University, and she's currently a graduate student with me at the New School of Media Studies at the New School. She has also her own company called Daughters of Eve Media, which produces film screenings, panel discussions, and content for film festivals, and has been a regular partnership with the American Black Film Festival in Miami. Terry joined me because, unfortunately, neither of the filmmakers were available to be present at the Q&A, but we had a lively discussion, which we will join now as we are talking about the background of the film, which was actually released originally in 2016, screened at the Rotterdam and Urban World Film Festivals, but has never had a theatrical release to date. So, Siad, joining me?
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk about film and art and culture with you, Michelle.
Likewise.
Yeah. So, this movie, Double Play, was amazing. First off, the cast was great. It's great seeing Lou Gossett Jr. in there, getting some work in there. it was just a stellar cast. Lala Anthony was in there. I didn't even recognize her at first. Yeah. And someone next to me was like, that's Lala. I said, oh, yeah, it is Lala. I remember you saying, you introed the movie by saying the cast was gorgeous.
The beautiful, beautiful.
And it
people.
Was.
I know, right?
Just everyone was beautiful. And obviously the set and where it took place, it just was a perfect set. But the characters were just so lively. You really fell for the characters themselves. In particular, the father, who was definitely the centerpiece, I felt for the movie.
Boo boo.
Boo boo. Yeah. B-U-B-U.
Yes.
Yeah. It really mirrors life in that things are way more complex than we like to give credit to when we want to say, point fingers as to why something is working or is not working in regards to relationships and within it's, whether it's personal or cultural or a combination of all of that, because there's love involved and there's people, real connections, and it's not just, oh, you did something wrong, I'm going to get rid of you. It's just, I'm really connected to you. So, with the main character going back, a similar theme as from Elsa, I thought it was great that you paired these two movies together, having someone that had a childhood growing up in Curacao, going back trying to reconcile, I don't want to give it away, but reconcile something that we don't find out until the end of the movie. The format is it plays as a flashback.
Right.
And most of the movie takes place during the flashback, and you almost get lost. You almost forget that
it is a flashback.
That it is a flashback because you get so caught up into it, and it just has a lot of layers. It's very well done. Ernest Dickerson did an amazing job, experience and a talent to do it. So it's an amazing film. I implore anyone to watch it.
Yeah, I recommend highly that if you see the film about to be played somewhere, I've been showing it here in New York. This I think is the third or fourth time that I've shown it, but it hasn't been really screened much here, and we're still trying to get a grip on when it will be released on Amazon or something along those lines. But I call it a love triangle with extensive cultural references.
Yes, it's a great way to explain it.
It is something that has so much of the Curaçaoan culture in it that you can't see most places.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think are some specifics that are Curaçaoan culture, if I can say that?
Yeah, I think Curaçaoliño is how you're supposed to say it.
Okay.
Yes. I think actually, the relationships between men and women, the sort of defined gender roles,
right,
that it was actually not unusual for Boo Boo to have more than one woman.
Right. And the wife being kind of sort of okay with it.
Exactly. Kind of sort of.
Yeah.
I think also the relationship to the children in the film, that was very much a huge part of the family structure that was very embedded in the culture, the respect that kids have for their parents and the parents' friends, and, those hierarchies still exist.
Right.
Again, what you said about the complexity of the characters, I think it gets more complex the more deep colonialization has had a role.
Absolutely.
On culture.
Yeah. Agreed.
And this culture, you know, Papiamento is the language that is spoken in Curaçao. It's a combination of Portuguese, Dutch, French, Spanish. So there you have it.
Lots of influences.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Let's continue with the Q&A for Double Play with Terry Prettyman Bowles and myself, Michelle Mater. I'll let you talk to Lisa Cortez and find out why. So just a little background on the film. Obviously, we're not the filmmakers, so we can't answer specific questions, but we can talk about some of the ideas in it, and I can give you a little background. So this was based on a novel from the 1970s by author Frank Martinez Arayan, who was a Curaçalino, and he died in 2015, but he was probably one of three of the most famous Curaçalino writers in the country, in the world. And it was called Double Splel in Papiamento, which means dominoes. Double play, double splel, double. And I thought what was interesting is that Aaron's degree was in medieval Dutch from the University of Amsterdam. But I think that language, Papiamento, is such a unique language that you have to study like every single one of the languages to understand it. So. So the way the film came about was Ernest and his wife Rose were frequent visitors to Curaçao, and Lisa Cortez had heard about some investors that were looking to shoot a film in Curaçao, and she immediately thought of Ernest because she knew how much he loved it, and they were able to make a deal, and it all happened. And they talked at the first screening that we did at Metrograph about some of the challenges working in a space like the Caribbean, like Curaçao. But they were so adamant that they wanted an international cast. So as you could see, I mean, were those the most beautiful people you've ever seen or what? Mm-hmm. Yes. They were from, well, did you recognize Lala Anthony, anybody? Right? Is she amazing? They were from, Isaac Bangale is from Ghana.
Melanie Liebert is from the UK.
Right. Gosh, now I'm not going to remember anybody's name. The one who played Austriche, he is from Martinique. He actually played Franz Fanon in Isaac Julian's film, Black Skin, White Masks. And, oh gosh, who else? Lou, of course, Lou Gossett.
And an amazing.
Oh, and did you recognize the guy from Luke Cage?
Yes.
Yeah. Moved to, yes, Bushmaster. So that was. Okay. So, and they had such limited access to things like wardrobe and set. I mean, everything was basically there. They painted them one of the houses to be the color of the sea, and everything else was as it was. They even had the actors use their own wardrobes because they didn't have wardrobe. But so, Terry, you want to talk about some of the things you liked?
Yeah, so this film, to me...
This is Terry Prettyman Bowles, by the way, if people don't know. Yeah, everybody knows Terry.
You know, could kind of be subtitled, you know, the aftermath of colonialism.
Yes.
So much of what we see is really motivated by poverty, suffering, and manifested in a million different ways. But I wanted to first talk about Ernest Dickerson, who is a brilliant director. If you're not familiar with Ernest Dickerson's work, you might know his kind of seminal film Juice, Tupac Shakur, Omar Epps, or his work with Spike Lee. He's also directed Tremé for television, The Wire, The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. So in thinking about Double Play, Michelle, what I was wondering is where does a film like this fit into the story of Black life in the diaspora? Mm-hmm. You think about that range of work from Juice, School Days, early Spike Lee films, to Double Play, just the general context, how do we put double play into this broader context of Black life?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think asking that question made me immediately go to Daughters of the Dust, mm-hmm. because everybody said the same thing about that film. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that film, right? Daughters of the Dust, Julie Dash. Okay. I'm trying to keep you awake. So everybody said the exact same thing about that film, which is why when we distributed it 27 years ago now, it was such a task to take on to convince people that this film was worthy of distribution. And now, you know, it's considered a classic. It's in the Library of Congress. You know, there's nothing been anything produced like it since. So, and I think this film has similar characteristics. Mm-hmm. And it's probably hasn't been picked up for distribution because of a lot of the same reasons. People don't know what to do with it. Right. It doesn't fit into any of these categories and any of these slots that mm-hmm. Black film is supposed to fit into. And so how do you convince an audience? But I mean, every audience I've shown it to was quite convinced. So I don't know where it fits. I think it just goes to show the range of what's possible mm-hmm. in terms of our filmmakers of color and what they're capable of and what audiences are capable of consuming.
And if you think about the distance between Daughters of the Dust and now, you know, Julie Dash has spoken at length about how difficult it has been for her to produce films in that time, even after, you know, a masterwork like Daughters of the Dust. So Daughters of the Dust, double play, both this extremely gorgeous visual palette, this very rich cultural aesthetic, mm-hmm. Obviously one that audiences are very responsive to when they get a chance to see films like this. So why do you think it's still so difficult to get films such as these in front of mainstream audiences? That's a loaded question.
It is, but I think it's also, as we talked about in the earlier session with Elza, mm-hmm. a lot of these same issues remain today. I mean, we still don't own our own distribution outlets. We still don't own our mm-hmm. own production entities that like a studio. You know, we are not in control of our image, especially in the Hollywood genre. So, I mean, I think this is why independent filmmakers are going a totally different route mm. and are really looking to, you know, the online environment. You know, Netflix has obviously made a huge dent in this material as others are trying to do as well. But it's the same, unfortunately, same issues that we mm-hmm. had when Daughters was up.
So in this film, we see innumerable themes. Sexuality, sexual exploitation, control, power, death, nature. So often Black-oriented cinema is expected to kind of deliver a message. So can we talk briefly about how Ernest Dickerson manages to really avoid that trap by weaving together all of these different themes without kind of communicating this singular message to the audience?